You are listening to the Dharma Ocean podcast. Reggie recorded the following reflections while in retreat in Crestone, Colorado.
I wanted to just briefly touch on meditation and compassion. And I thought tonight we could do some of the very interesting work with compassion that is part of this tradition. So are you up for that? Should we do that? Yeah. So Vajrayana Buddhism, which is not necessarily very well known in the West yet, is about the sacredness of the human person. And what it teaches is that within each one of us, there is an authentic person, which is completely unique in the universe, completely individual, incomparable person. And that this authentic person, which is us, it's our true person, it's who we really are. It's not just emptiness. This authentic person has an authentic personality. It's what in Christian tradition says God calls you by your true name, they are referring to this authentic person. Vajrayana Buddhism teaches the same thing. And we are born, we have a purpose in life. And of course, many of us spend our whole lives searching for a purpose. Is it communism? Is it capitalism? Is it religion? Is it philosophy? Is it to do this or to that, to be an artist or to travel? Or what is my purpose? What is my purpose? Everybody wonders. Because we know we have a purpose. There's something in us that knows, but we don't know what it is. And the teaching of Vajrayana Buddhism is that our purpose in life is to discover and uncover and free and express our authentic personhood, the person that we truly are. So the journey of spirituality is a journey of self-discovery, and at the same time, a journey of finding out how we need to be in the world and how we need to be with other people. And again, that true personhood is not given by books or texts or traditions or some external force, our parents, our culture, because it's incomparable and unique, the person that we are, we alone can discover it with the help of traditions and friends and family and therapists and meditation practices. But ultimately, it's for us to discover. It's our own unique journey. This is why the human person is so sacred, because the universe, you know, we're not interchangeable. Even in mass society, every single person in mass society is a unique individual and comes with the imperative of discovering who they are and expressing it in the world. So you could say we're on a mission, each one of us. We're on a mission to actually be ourselves. And you know, you might think that that's a narcissistic process, but actually it's the exact opposite of narcissism. Discovering who we are, and we'll talk about, you know, the journey as it's understood within Vajrayana Buddhism. Discovering who we are, ultimately we discover that our life is not for ourselves. It's for others. Our life is not for ourselves. It's for others. It's for the world. The, you know, for me, as I've mentioned, I think the ultimate emblem and symbol and expression of what it means to be oneself is Jesus. That he was willing to go even and die a most horrible death, because to do anything other would have been to pull back from the love that he felt, and actually his mission to preach the teachings of love to others. He was given a choice, definitely given a choice. The folks in the temple in Jerusalem didn't like his message. His message was, you don't need to go to the temple and pay your money and enlist the priests, because you have immediate and direct open access to God right now, and your salvation is already happened. And they didn't want to hear it, because it would have undermined their whole thing. And he was given the chance to renounce what he had come to offer, and he didn't do it. He was, as the Bible says, he was faithful to the end. And may each one of us have the courage to be faithful to who we are, and willingness to see our life through, to discover who we are and to express it. So, in the journey of meditation in Vajrayana is all about this kind of fundamental exploration and discovery and birth process. And as we've already talked about, the first step in the meditative journey is to connect with what's called the meditative state. And that meditative state is nothing other than our own fundamental awareness. In Buddhism, it's called the Dharmakaya. And those of you who have been here before have heard me talk about the, you know, this fundamental nature is, it's open and empty and clear awareness. It's the, our ability to know and to experience and to see. It's the fundamental intelligence in us that receives everything that happens to us in our life. And through the practice of meditation, as we know, and again we'll do that a little bit tonight, we are able to touch that basic nature, and we're able to feel it and know it experientially. One of the key points of the meditative traditions in all the great religions is that theology is all well and good, and thinking is all well and good, but until we actually taste the experience of freedom and liberation and love, it doesn't mean that much. This is one of the, I think, most difficult messages for the Western world. As I made my first trip to the East in 1962. That's 50 years ago, isn't it? Yeah. And so I've had my eye on this process the whole entire time. And I would say the most difficult thing for Western people to hear is that reading and thinking and talking and conceptualizing are not it. And that only direct experience of spirituality is going to have any kind of satisfying impact on ourselves. Vajrayana says, practice is the way in which you understand reality. And only when your mind opens fully and you learn how to let go of your small self and view reality from the viewpoint of your own unborn nature, your own immeasurable awareness that is at the foundation of your personality, only when you see reality from that viewpoint do you understand anything. Conceptual understanding is not understanding. Neurobiology is all over this. The left brain does not actually understand anything. It can conceptualize, it can draw conclusions, it can come up with generalizations, but it doesn't, there's no immediate understanding because the left brain doesn't experience things directly. The right brain, which is the body, which is the Buddha nature, which is our own intuitive mind, looks and sees and understands things directly. The path of meditation, hi, come on in. Come in and have a seat. The path of meditation is designed to activate our intuition, to activate our what's called the direct perception of reality. So the first step in meditation is really to discover the what's called the immeasurable expanse of our own basic nature. And we've been working on that here last few weeks. And then, so we could say, well, what does that have to do with my authentic person? Well, that is our authentic person in an unmanifest state. When we sit down, and you know, in Crestone, Colorado, this happens to us, this happens to us, as we all know. We sit down and all of a sudden the mind is completely empty and open and present. That is our authentic essence. Actually, that living awareness, that living space in our own experience, that's actually who we are fundamentally. And if we stay with that, many people, as we've talked about, feel that's the end of the journey. Because the experience of that basic nature, of that mind that is empty and open and infinite, there's a tremendous sense of freedom, there's a sense of joy, there's a sense of having arrived, actually, at ourself. And we have arrived, because that is ourself. But it's not the end of the journey, it's actually only the beginning. Out of that, if we stick with it and work with it, out of that begins to be born all kinds of interesting energies and inspirations. More open we are in a strange way, the more inspiration we feel and the more connection we feel with other people, as you may well know. And that is the inspiration of our authentic person, which is known as the Sambhogakaya in Buddhism. But inspiration calls for engagement. Inspiration calls us to make our inspiration, our tenderness, our mercy, our compassion, our love, our confidence, our sense of sacredness, our appreciation, you know, all of these what we would call non-ego emotions, they call for us to express that in the world. And that's the nirmanakaya, where we are a certain way, you know, we make up with a certain friend, or we take a chance on ourselves and follow something that has called to us our whole life that we've been afraid to follow. That's the nirmanakaya. And that beautiful flow, emptiness, inspiration, and creativity is the mark of our authentic person. It's the life of our authentic person. And it is true, when that flow is happening with us, we feel the creativity in us and we feel the power of the universe flowing through us. And we feel, this is why I'm here. Even if it's simply smiling at someone on the street, we feel this is why I was born. I was born to be right here in the sunshine with this sad person and able to smile and express my love for this person. I was born for that. That feeling is the feeling of our authentic person. Now, as we know, there's this other little problem that we have, which is that our authentic person has an overlay. There's a cloak over that authentic person of all of the, we could say, conditioned experiences we've had in our present life. And, you know, the traumas that we've been through, the fear that we have, the hesitation we have, the lack of confidence we have, the reactivity we have, how easily we get triggered by certain people, and the, you know, really the human condition, you know, that it's almost as if we glimpse an authenticity in us in the beginning, but we feel so messed up and we feel so covered over and we feel that that person is almost inaccessible to us, the authenticity of ourselves. And the purpose of meditation is gradually to peel away all of the things that get between us and the person that we know ourselves to be. You know, when we are in a what I call a domestic altercation, I like that term because it covers a lot of different kinds of situations you could get into with your spouse or your partner or whatever it may be. Do you like that, domestic altercation? Yeah, I like that. It's a good term. It kind of has a slight sense of humor about it. Like, are you two doing that again? And at the same time, it's very real. And you know, when we are in that kind of situation and we are struggling with people, or you know, people trigger us to the point where we can't actually have a decent conversation with them, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel right. And the reason it doesn't is because we always have this dim awareness of our own authenticity within. And we, you know, I'm going to show you practice tonight actually to work with that. And when we are able to let go of the reactivity and then all of a sudden we realize, hey, I really love this person. And you can turn on a dime from I hate you, I don't know why I'm with you, I don't know why I ever, you know, ever married you, you're the most horrible person I ever met. You can go from that one to suddenly feeling how much appreciation you have for this person, how much you love them, and how much sympathy you have for them having to deal with you. That's a big one for me. It's like, wow, you put up with me. That's really amazing. So that's the journey, you know, for the Vajrayana. It's not getting rid of the ego. That's not it. And I know some, you know, religious traditions don't like the ego and they want to get rid of it. And they're very disparaging of the ego. It's not getting rid of the ego. What it is connecting with the person within us who actually is not ego-based. Our authentic person doesn't have an ego. We have a personality, we're colorful, we're interesting, we're funny, but we don't have an ego. When we are truly being ourselves, we're coming out of a different space, which is our own authenticity. So the journey in Vajrayana Buddhism is to discover that authentic person and to more and more align ourselves with the person we really are. And in the process, to let go of some of the habitual patterns and habitual reactivity that really has been hanging us up, you know, much of our life. The you know, some spiritual traditions work from the outside in, you know, and a lot of psychological traditions work from the outside in. You try to peel away the neurotic behavior, and if you feel that if you peel it away enough, then what's left is going to be a good thing. The Vajrayana is a completely different approach. What it does is it taps us into the beauty and the uniqueness and the purity actually of who we are already, our authenticity, our personhood, our unique person. It taps us into that, and when you turn that light on, then the darkness of neurosis really doesn't have a leg to stand on, and it becomes, it never goes away. You still hear those voices out there, but you don't, they're not interesting anymore. What is interesting is your own life. See what I'm getting at? So this is Trungpa Rinpoche, my teacher, and the teacher behind this lineage, used to say that the Vajrayana is ultimate positivity. Ultimate positivity, because evil is just the absence of light. And when we turn the light on, then the darkness just automatically is shown up for what it is. And some of you who know about Buddha's philosophy, the Buddha nature is in the heart, it's not in the head. The organ of knowledge is the heart, it's not the brain. And that's because the knowledge of the heart is what we call objective. It's direct perception, it's not mediated by concepts. The heart knows in a different way from the thinking mind. And the knowledge of the heart is beyond karma. It's beyond past, present, and future, and it's outside the realm of judgment. So in our culture, what we have to do is, because our hearts are actually atrophied, or what's actually atrophied is the connecting links between the heart and the knowledge of the body, which is objective knowledge. It's knowing things as they are. The connecting link between that knowledge and the left brain has atrophied, and most of us live almost entirely in our left brain. Through the breathing practice, we're actually developing neurons, waking them up. They've been dormant, they've atrophied. So this practice actually is reactivating the neurons between the left brain and the soma, the corpus callosum and some of the other structures of the midbrain that mediate. And in Dharma Ocean, we do one of the parts of the journey is 300 hours of this practice. And people have told me that after doing 300 hours, they really feel like they're different people. And their lives are different because over the course of those 300 hours, you find out so much about, you know, you separate your neurotic reactivity to people and situations from actually the deeper feeling of your person and the deeper appreciation and the deeper love.
Download more of Reggie's teachings, find out about upcoming retreats, and to explore a variety of audio listening guides to assist you on your spiritual journey, please visit dharmaocean.org. Music is by Jeff Beal and Nawang Ketchog from the album Tibet, Cry of the Snow Lion.